Good evening. Welcome to the Jamie Glazoff Show. This evening, back by popular demand, Waleed Shubat. He's a former PLO terrorist and a former Muslim Brotherhood activist who turned to love. And he is the author of For God or for Tyranny. And he is educating us all these years and in these recent months about the truth, about what's going on in the world. Waleed, welcome back to the Jamie Glazoff Show.
You bet, Jamie. How are you?
Good. Waleed, is it okay how I introduced you?
That's fine.
Nothing wrong, right?
No, perfect.
Okay, good. Waleed, tonight's topic, of course, is all your new information about Obama's Wahhabist relatives. And we just finished watching the debate. I think the best way to start would be, why does Obama never discuss his relatives in Africa?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, he mentioned his grandmother. When he says, my grandmother, I says, oh, I thought he was talking about his grandmother in Kenya. But my wife says, no, he's talking about his local grandmother. Because, you know, my question has always been is that he never talks about his Kenyan family much. And that's absolutely unfair. He should be speaking about both the sides of his family. He ignores that side of the family because he knows that most Americans, you know, want homegrown American, and that maybe will perceive him as, not being homegrown, not from this country, from a foreign country, that kind of thing. So he plays politics. However, Obama still has connections and ties with his family in Kenya. In fact, Jamie, I think it's no secret to you that we've uncovered a 35-minute interview on the top Middle East television, Al Jazeera. On Al Jazeera, his cousin Musa Ismail Obama stated that President Obama's main uncle, his favorite uncle, Saeed Obama, was the main conduit of communique between the two, and that they continually communicate, but nobody knows the content of this communication. It's very secretive. And in fact, he stated to Al Jazeera that none of these things will be discussed during any interview. He interviews several major Arab media and an Arab newspaper in which that communique between Saeed Obama, the conduit, and President Obama is sort of kind of a hush-hush family secret in which the messages go back and forth, relaying messages back to each other. So in other words, what we need to establish first is that there is a communication continually between him and his Kenyan family, yet he never mentions anything about his Kenyan family in a debate format or even in his speeches. So, the question becomes is that what sort of communication goes on between him and his Uncle Saeed that is so secretive, especially when Uncle Saeed, has meetings with the Muslim World League, which, by the way, was very well tied to terror infrastructure.
Now, Waleed, let's take a step back for a minute. I really like one of the points you made in your article where you exposed the ties of Obama's Kenyan relatives. You say in the beginning that it's almost considered rude. It's almost considered, you know, as if we're doing something racist or bad when we even raise the topic of what his relatives do and who his relatives are. Why do you think that is? That you would think it's completely normal to wonder who the relatives are of a president?
Well, it's because Obama apparently has a feeling that Americans are racist. Okay, so it comes across very well. While Obama's connection to his Muslim family in Kenya is usually an acceptable topic for discussion in the Arab world, but it is viewed as a great taboo in the United States. But why is that? You know, this taboo was not created by Americans who are on the right or the conservative. That taboo was created on the left. So the left made a taboo. If anyone questions Obama's religious background, whether he went to madrasa, his Muslim background, they're the ones that made it a taboo. And by making it a taboo, we should consider this as an unfair issue. Why is it? Because we could say it's prejudice. You know, it is prejudice that we don't discuss Obama's African connection. that would be racist. But they're the ones that created this, separation of, you can't ask such questions. Is it fair that we censor such discussion just because Obama's relatives are Muslim? I mean, come on. I should be calling the Council of American Islamic Relations and filing a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
They should be condemning the media for keeping a tight lid on that subject, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, Waleed, let's look at this here. He's got a grandmother, Sarah Obama. And as you show in your article at Front Page, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, everybody should read it. Look up Meet Obama's Wahhabist Relatives in your Google search, or go to Front Page by Waleed and Theodore Shobach. Theodore is Waleed's very bright son, and they've co-authored an article together, Meet Obama's Wahhabist Relatives. And Waleed, this grandmother has this fund, the Sarah Obama Benevolent Fund Institute, right?
Correct.
And this is supposedly for humanitarian aid. But it turns out that it's not really everything it says it is.
Yes, in fact, we should quote verbatim what the fund on its website states. That it states that the issue of HIV and poverty and widows, all these issues really continued to weigh heavily on Mama Sarah. All this, and to help the neglected HIV/AIDS infected and affected in Kogelo Village, where the Obama family comes from, by linking them to caregivers and professional health service providers. And this is why even Bill Gates sends funding, and some Catholic movement sends funding, and there's donations galore coming from the United States. This is not a small operation. This is a major operation.
Huh.
So this is how they paint the front of this fund to as a humanitarian, a kind of a liberal humanitarian mostly, the HIV issues. And yet you never find a single comment about HIV when the family tries to raise fund in the Middle East. Not once mentioned in any media. I dare anybody to find it. Musa Ismail Obama, who's the president's first cousin, he has this exclusive interview in Al Jazeera, and we find out of 35 minutes that the bulk of the Sara Fund, which, the Mama Sara Fund thing, as it turns out, it sends little to widows and orphans. The rest goes towards giving scholarships, studying Sharia.
Hmm.
Where? Not just any Sharia school, but at the top three most virulent Wahhabist schools in the world, in Saudi Arabia itself.
Hmm.
In the shocking interview, Jamie, Musa was asked about his communications, and he says there's perfect communications going on between us. And then they use the Obama name. They use the president's name, which is illegal, to raise funds for a Kenyan scam. Can anybody imagine a Kenyan scam being raised to send, students on scholarships? 90% of this money comes from the West, United States, some from Europe, to go to Wahhabist pro-terror schools. In fact, he stated himself that, he went to Umm al-Qura. And when I heard Umm al-Qura, I was shocked. Umm al-Qura, in Saudi Arabia, is the number one university that first articulated and printed the works of Muhammad Abdul Wahhab. He is the founder of Wahhabism, the godfather of Wahhabism, the godfather of all terrorist movements like Al-Qaeda. So, this is absolutely shocking information. In fact, if people doubt what we're saying is true, it was picked up by The Spectator. The Spectator, in fact, added and chimed in further after they examined what we've said and what we've written. They've cross-referenced it. They've looked at the translation. They looked at everything. And this is they had their most reputable writer. In fact, he added and chimed in more information that is shocking, and that there was an interview done by the British, a liberal outfit, I forgot its name, major one, and they asked her about women, about wife's beating and so on and so forth. And she said that a husband has a right to beat his wife. They couldn't believe the answer. they asked the question again, and she confirmed it again and again and again, that wives are to be beaten by their husband. This is in accordance to Sharia law. So you're not talking about secular Muslims.
Right.
We're talking about virulent Wahhabi Muslims, this the Kenyan family of Obama. And we're talking about not just any family, my friend. We're talking about the members of the family that visited President Obama during the inauguration, that he himself promoted them for years. And they appear in an Arab newspaper, so, you know, talking about how they're going to basically transform Kenya from being one-third Muslim to become totally Muslim, and how they even refer to Obama without any single reference to his supposed Christian conversion, but all the references in Al-Arab was shocking that he is a Muslim, Obama's Islam. There's an entire section in the newspaper talking about Obama's Islam, that Obama is Muslim and still is Muslim. These are not my words, by the way. These are the words of the Middle East. This is the words of the Obama family, you know, as they collaborate with the Arab sources, with Arab media.
But Waleed, what a tragedy in the Western world that even me, the host, that is supposed to be immersed in all of these issues, even some of what you're saying today, I have never heard before. And it's incredible that you are the only person, maybe another handful, but this is nowhere in the New York Times. It's nowhere in the Washington Post. It's not on CNN. It's not on MSNBC. It's absolutely nowhere. And this is just incomprehensible when we really look at the picture.
Let me make a comment about what you said, you know, if I may. You know, I really don't do my work in order for the New York Times to pick it, or even Fox News to pick it, or anyone to pick it. I do my work solely so the history can pick it. In other words, I don't have a short-term plan. I have a long-term plan.
Okay.
It's the long-term investment that comes in the end to be true.
Yeah.
This is why, Jamie, on record, I was the first in the world to translate the works of Faisal Abdul Rauf, never heard before, in which I was on Fox News with Laura Ingraham. I was the first in this world to translate the works of Rashad Hussein, who wanted to intervene in the nuclear issue of Iran when he had no position to do so. And he was talking to Al-Ahram newspaper, to the editor of Al-Ahram, saying, I will intervene regarding the Iranian nuclear issue when the right time comes. I was the first to break this Obama story. I was the first to break in the Wahhabist connection with Hillary Clinton's aide, Humaya Bedin. I was the first to do multitudes of these things. Why? Because I'm interested in history.
Mm-hmm. But I think also, Waleed, maybe this goes without saying, but you also believe and are very focused, obviously, on telling the truth as a principle in and of itself, of course. But that goes
Where's CNN keeping them honest?
Yeah.
Where's CNN keeping Obama's family honest?
Yeah. Well, I want to go to a caller, but before I do, let me say this again: common sense. Waleed, let us suppose that I became famous and a great person, and my family comes from the Soviet Union, and we hate communism. We hate the KGB. They are the devil. They are evil, what the KGB and communism represents. Let's say I became famous for whatever reason or powerful, and I found out that my relatives in Russia began using my name to raise money that they put into the activities or the teaching or the interests of the KGB and communism. It would be my duty to publicly repudiate and denounce that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I can give you a case in point.
Let me finish. So,
go ahead.
Shouldn't Obama be on the rooftop screaming, do not use my name to further a system and ideology that persecutes non-Muslims and Christians and women and minorities, right?
Correct. Absolutely correct. And this turns us to the issue that is this so much taboo, and that is, what is Obama? What is President Obama? And the question, is he Muslim? Is he Christian? Is he socialist? What is really Obama? What is his core? to the question that why does Obama, every time he speaks about the Bible, if you can see it on YouTube, he's really condemning the Bible. I've never heard of a real Christian condemning the Bible. And he has no testimony. Can you produce a testimony of President Obama's conversion to Christianity? If so, a conversion is the kind of thing in which you talk about your past life and how you found your new life and your new faith. No such thing exists, including Jeremiah Wright confirms it. So the last record of Obama's faith was he was Muslim. Everybody knows it. He confesses it. So he goes to Egypt. He compliments the Quran. He compliments the Quran at every avenue he does, in every event he does. He's very complimentary of the Quran, critical of the Bible. He, in fact, you know, recites the call to the prayer, classical Arabic language. In fact, if Americans want to see the real Obama, they need to look at his cousin, is, you know, Musa Ismail Obama, speaking classical Arabic, memorizes the Quran. Okay, and in fact, he memorized the Quran in Kenya, not in Saudi Arabia. Okay, in Kenya, Muslims have madrasas. Obama was in a madrasa in Kenya. In Kogilo, okay, in Kenya, that was the only family in the entire village, was the Obama family. And they went from rags to riches as a result of President Obama. President Obama has another relative called George Obama, which he could care less. George is a Christian name. It's not a Muslim name. George's mother is from a Christian sect, not a Muslim sect. And the difference between treating the family because of the faith, in fact, none of them got it. In fact, they try to avoid it. Even on the right, they try to avoid it. You know, that made the documentary about George Obama? D'Souza. Yeah. D'Souza, I believe perhaps D'Souza ignored the issue of George's family's faith or the sect that they come from. He doesn't have to be a very devout Christian, but in the Middle East and Africa and those part of the country, the third world countries, your faith is decided by your name, your last name, your sect, regardless to what you believe. But D'Souza stated that it's because George is conservative. No, I don't think so. I don't think George is conservative. I think George comes from a mother that is a Christian mother. I know that because I, like Obama, had a Muslim father and had a Christian mother, had an American family, and had a Middle Eastern family, Muslim family. So I could relate to the way Obama's life is, being in between, being in the middle. Okay, but he chose the other side. He chose mostly the Muslim side, not the Christian side of his family.
Waleed, we're going to go to a call. Let me change subjects for a minute. I'm looking at our chats and how much people love you. There's a listener right now that writes, "I absolutely love Waleed Shubat." And somebody writes back, "Me too. Have you met him?" "No, I haven't. Have you?" "Yes. And they were blessed. They came out to see you this summer." All kinds of people writing in our chat room. We are going to go to Diane from California.
Hi, Jamie.
Very nice to hear you from California, Diane. Thank you. Do you have a question for our modern-day freedom fighter?
Yes, Mr. Shubat, I have read a couple of your books. I like it very much. Like them very much.
Which books did you read, by the way?
Oh, you know, you don't ask me title. I don't remember the title. But
what was he saying?
I'm so sorry, because I read it 2 years ago. So
what did you like about his book, Diane?
He was talking, you know, the thing that really sticks in my mind is that the Muslims have their own Christ figure that's going to return. Issa?
Right. You must have read God's War and Terror.
There you go. Anyway, I was impressed. I just can't remember titles of everything.
It's good that you remembered the author and not the title rather than the other way around.
Oh, thank you, Jamie.
A book is not judged by its title, by the way.
Right.
Thank you for that save there, Jamie. Anyway, Waleed, I agree with you so much that Obama's a Muslim. Reverend Wright's church, for instance, that was not a Christian church. I don't care what anybody says. Christian pastors do not preach hate like that. They just don't. So they can call it what they want, but not a Christian church. And Obama can say he's Christian all day long and go to church once in a while, but that doesn't make him a Christian. So it's his actions that reveal what he really is. And I think he has great sympathies towards the jihadists, don't you? I think that his foreign policies sort of reveal that he makes it easier for them to do what they do. And I think that he, do you agree that that our media is just paralyzed with political correctness? That's why they don't say anything about his Islamic ties and his sympathies towards them.
Good points. The goal that was expressed in an interview with Obama's first cousin, since you're talking about Obama's Islam,
mm-hmm.
It's very interesting to note. This is a major Arab newspaper, by the way. You know, he covered the interview was covered there, in which the article states the following. There's a section in the article that says, "Scholars in Kenya call their brethren to spread Islam and teach Arabic," close quote. It states, quote, I'm reading exact quotes, "Muslims
mm-hmm.
in Kenya suffer
mm-hmm.
from monumental Christianization aided by Zionist expansionism that
yeah.
infiltrates the nation," close quote. Muhammad Lashib, Al Arab Newspaper, 8816 edition, published on August 1st, 2012. Anybody wants to scoot
I read
it
that
up?
In your article. Yes, I read that. Uh-huh.
Right. So to say that the Zionist expansionism, excuse me, Jamie Glazov should be absolutely ticked off. You know, to accuse him, he's a Zionist, he's Jewish, accuse
right.
him, accuse David Horowitz, the Zionist expansionist. They're
mm-hmm.
the evil ones. And him
yeah.
appearing on that interview, it's absolutely deplorable for the Obama administration. I think this story is going to slowly merge into the media as we speak, because as we get closer to the deadline, those stories are going to become relevant. Here's why. Because Obama's connection to his family is a case in point and crucial. You cannot use the Obama name, President Obama's name, to raise Kenyan scam for Sharia and Jihad, number
mm-hmm.
one. Number two, you cannot be, in fact, a government official, work for any government job, if and when your family associations are detrimental to the security of this country, or any country for
mm-hmm.
that matter. So
mm-hmm.
the association, you know, it's called CARL, commitment, associations. You know, associations are crucial, because they say, well, you know, it's guilt by association. Not true in accordance
mm-hmm.
to American policy of getting jobs at a government. Now, this is a job at a government. How about president? I mean, it's absolutely crucial
mm-hmm.
that a president in the United States of America doesn't have such relations.
Mm-hmm. And you know that he knows it. That's why he doesn't talk about his family much over there, because he knows what they're up to, and he doesn't disagree. Because I
he
think
does.
That's
in
where
fact, his cousin testified.
Yeah,
his,
that's where his sympathies
testified.
Lie.
Messages back
his
and forth. He knows everything we do, and so on and so forth. And he's okay
and
with
that's
us.
Why he
Love
did
him,
nothing.
You know?
That's why he did nothing in Benghazi. I believe that through and through. That he
Diane, you sound a little bit like you're suffering from Islamophobia.
I am pretty afraid of him, to tell you the truth. Also, Walid, what do you think about that ring? Do you think that's bogus reporting, or that Islamic ring that he has on Obama?
Well, I mean,
have you heard that
if you
story?
Ask if you ask a Walid Shubat opinion, it's going to be very honest, regardless whether it's pro-Walid Shubat or not.
Uh-huh.
If you take a car, okay, and take a helicopter photographing that car in a desert, the car makes a right and then makes a U-turn, makes a left, sharp left, and makes another U-turn, and makes another sharp left, makes another U-turn, makes a right, and make another left, sharp U-turn, and then make another right, sharp U-turn. Go halfway, you spell the word Allah. But does that prove that this van was riding Allah in the desert? No.
Mm.
Because the word Allah, you know, is a squiggly. That's all it is. It's a squiggly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a snake, winding snake. It's
mm-hmm.
very difficult to determine emphatically and by proof that that's
mm-hmm.
what's on that ring. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's two patterns on that ring, and I got a better photo than what was shown. And there's two patterns, the same pattern. One, they're in a kind of in a boxy area, two boxy areas, and both mimic each other and mirror each other with the same squiggly. It could be two Allahs. One on the right has damage. Okay, that damage caused it to become La Ilaha. Okay, which means no God but Allah. Okay, so if you go to the van thing, go back and forth, and somebody goes and draws a line and cuts those lines, you could read things of that sort, but it's not even legible to say there is no God but Allah. So there are two squigglies and nothing more, okay, if you look at it. But however, having said that, you can still make the case that they do say Allah. But to make the entire statement, no God but Allah in one part of the pattern, and one is under the other, and that kind of thing, it becomes an issue of gymnastics. So I wouldn't put much,
Waleed, it's still Islamic.
Of course, if you write a squiggly, it looks Islamic. Of course it looks Islamic. But was that the intent of the artist who put that design on the ring? You cannot determine that.
It's not a cross. It's not a cross. Let's just say that.
Diane, thank you very much for calling in.
You're welcome, Jamie. Bye-bye, Waleed.
Thank you, Diane.
You know, Jamie, what's interesting is that a lot of Americans, especially on the right, you know, they get one word, Allah, and then they go millions of people reading it, oh, they discovered Allah on the ring. Okay.
Yeah.
But I think what we need to do is not those issues. We need to do is look at the more proven issues, credible issues.
Yeah, the ones that you're
not
talking about. Yeah.
Not issues that cannot be 100% ascertained. We need to be very careful.
347-857-1380. 347-857-1380. We're going to go to Nadir from Illinois.
Okay, hello, Jamie.
Yes, Nadir.
Oh, hi, how you doing? And hi to you, Waleed. I just had a quick question for him.
Okay.
Waleed, I'm sure you're aware of the CNN coverage of you, which you emphatically denied, in which they exposed you as a fraud, which you said, of course, they were working for CARE. But my question to you, Waleed Chobat, is, okay, I can understand maybe CNN was biased against you, but how do you explain that some of the most prominent New Testament scholars like Dr. Dan Wallace and others are saying the same thing, that you are a fraud and a deceiver? I mean, what did CARE buy off Dr. Dan Wallace and Dr. James White, as well as all these other Bible scholars?
Well, it's a very good question. In fact, I'd like you to stay on the line and answer a question with a question. Since you've examined all these people, can you produce, sir, any document from the Israeli government that states I was not in prison? Yes or no?
Well, I'm not sure if you're answering.
It's a yes or no, then you can comment, sir.
Okay.
Yes or no, then you can comment.
Okay.
It's a yes or no, then you can comment. It's that easy.
Okay.
Can you produce a document from an official, credited government official from the Israeli government that says, I was never in prison? Yes or no, then you can comment. Fair question. You can answer, sir.
Now, I'm trying to answer. I don't know because I never researched the thing, but you're not answering my question. Why is Dr. Dan Wallace, one of the most prominent eminent scholars, calling you a fraud? Why is that?
Well, there's many prominent scholars. You have one who won the Pulitzer Prize who says, oh, these guys are frauds, but never justifies that fraud. So when you name this person's name, can you give the quote by that person you just named that gives the evidence that I'm a fraud?
Yeah, they're saying that you're lying about words and their translations in the New Testament because you said that the word
What
Allah
does that got to do with me being a fraud? What does that got to do with me being a fraud?
Well,
fraud. I'm talking about not being a terrorist, not being in prison. Come on, Nadir.
Okay, no. I can understand, or maybe CNN, maybe these people might have been bought off by the Islamic people and the Muslims. Okay, fine, but so many Bible scholars making warnings about you that you're lying about the Greek manuscript?
Okay, just like, what do you mean so many? I've heard one or one or two. Okay.
Well, the one which I have in front of me is Dr.
I'm sorry,
Dan
what was
Wallace.
The name again? I'd like to write that name down so this way I give a detailed answer to your question in my writing.
Okay.
What's the name again?
Okay, this is Dr. Dan Wallace. Anyone who knows anything about New Testament studies, he's one of the most prominent scholars on the New Testament out there in the world. There's Dr. James White. he is also an anti-Islamic personality. Now, why would he lie about you?
And now, just a second. Nadir, but you're saying that their criticisms were about Walid's translations from Arabic to English in terms of the New Testament? This isn't about the other things that he talks about, right?
Well, they're saying he's deceiving people.
In what way?
Well, they're saying that, well, basically, I'm actually reading from Alpha and Omega Ministries article by Dr. James White, and in which he wrote an article in which they said that the what Walid is saying about the word Allah being found in the New Testament, that is somehow the mark of the beast, 666, is all baloney. So,
all right, fine. That's their opinion. Yeah. But what does that got to do with him being a fraud? My friend?
Yeah, that's
a fraud
their,
means
that's their
I was never a terrorist. I was never in prison. So would we...
Hold on a second.
Would we agree, me and you, right now, that that is not related to me being a fraud, which you brought first, CNN, remember?
Right, you brought CNN.
Let me finish. First, you brought CNN. Okay? That means I'm a fraud. What CNN said, I was never in prison. Okay? I never committed a terrorist attack. Now, what does that relate? How does that relate to this issue here? See how you spun it? This is a problem.
How it's related to.
Okay, just a second. Nadir, what I always find a bit concerning is, number one, you ask these questions and you seem to be interested in Walid Shubat's reputation, and yet he asks you a question, the most important question, in terms of the accusations against him, and you don't even know the issue. So in terms of you producing anything that proves that Walid is not who he says he is, it doesn't exist, right?
Correct.
And secondly, why aren't we, in terms of the message that Walid has, why is it that people are always attacking people's character? I'm just interested, Nadir, are you concerned about the ties of Obama's family to Wahhabism? Are you concerned about the Muslim Brotherhood penetrating this administration? Why are we focused on attacking Walid's interpretation of the Second Coming? And, you know, maybe he has a different interpretation than somebody else. Go ahead.
Okay, can I answer? Well, here's why I'm interested in this, is because it's not just Walid Shobat. It's these people who claim to be terrorist experts, one by one, they're coming out to be frauds. The other one is Dr. Irvin Tanner. Dr. Irvin Tanner, who is the dean of Liberty University, he lied, of course, about his ties to terrorism. He claimed to be an ex-terrorist. So, and these are just a few examples which I'm sharing with you. So, I mean, still, I'm not sure if I heard an answer to my question, is why would people from a complete different background, from Bible,
well, the answer is simple, my friend.
You know?
The answer is very simple. You brought an issue that somebody disagrees, that I saw the three characters in the New Testament, in the Book of Revelation, hold on a second, to say Bismillah. And you brought another issue before that I was a fraud in accordance to CNN, that I was never in prison. It is impossible for you to conclude that I'm a fraud by bringing two stories which don't even relate to each other. So stick with one narrative. Are you sticking with the CNN narrative, or are you sticking with the issue of this Wallace fella? I mean, you need to stick to one issue. Which issue would you like to handle?
Sure, Walid, I'll be more than happy to debate you on anything regarding Islam.
Okay, just a second. Nadir, what do you mean by that? Are you a Muslim?
Of course.
You don't remember? I was on your show, Jamie.
Oh, okay, well, there's many Nadirs. I'm also getting old, and I maybe Alzheimer's is setting in.
Yeah,
I need to be reminded of that.
Me and Robert Spencer and...
I see. Okay, Nadir, maybe we will set up a debate. But Nadir,
did you want to debate Islam with me?
Well, why would I want to debate you? I don't know who you are. You send me your credentials so I can see if you're fit for a debate.
Okay, Nadir, the bottom line is
that,
Nadir, listen, when you say why would these people denounce or say this about Walid, how do we know the psychology of other human beings? We don't have ESP. The bottom line is that the charges against Walid, the slander and defamation, has always been hearsay and not founded on evidence. And you haven't produced any evidence.
Why is it every single radio interview I have, as soon as there's a Muslim caller, it's that nature? When are Muslims going to stop that nature who claim to say that they're in combat against terrorism, in which they never call in to combat terrorism. They call in always to combat the one who's fighting terrorism. They never combat, well, wait a minute, maybe we should not let people get out of Gitmo. They want to imprison the repentant terrorists like myself. They should be in Gitmo, but we should release Gitmo.
Nadir, Nadir, listen, you can write to me and we can arrange a debate if Waleed agrees to it. But before we go, can I ask you a question as a Muslim person who you say you are, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just sure. Okay, let me ask you a question. Is it true or false that the Prophet Muhammad oversaw and perpetrated the genocide of an entire Jewish tribe in terms of the men of Banu Karazai? Is that true?
No, it's absolutely false. In fact, I have an article on my website on this. If you go to my website, examinethetruth.com/jihad. Okay? And I
right, but why are you not... But you should be combating the Muslim scholars, because they're the ones that said the story.
No, they
why are you combating...
Well, can I respond to Jamie?
Go ahead.
Okay, no, that's absolutely false. In fact, that's being quoted from Sira Ibn Ishaq, I believe page 464. If you read over there and you actually see, and this is a challenge I always raise for people who raise this issue. Have you ever read the actual source yourself, Jamie? Can you answer that for me?
Oh, my goodness. This, you know what? No matter how we go on with this, you always get into the sources. Let me tell you something. We're going to go now. We'll arrange this later. Robert Spencer has dealt with you many times.
All right.
And
no matter what happens, you always
talk about translations. So, in other words, you're saying that the genocide of Banu Karazai never happened. Am I correct? Hello?
There you go.
Waleed, go ahead.
Wallace never said I was a fraud. Mm-hmm. Wallace disagrees with me on an interpretation of the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's talking about. Many Christians don't agree with Christians. That doesn't make me a fraud.
Right.
That's all that is. Yet he connected the two, CNN and that one, as saying, wait a minute, Waleed, liberals and Christians alike say you're a fraud. You see how he spun it?
Yeah, but what's so sad is that in the discussion that we're trying to have, and I see you as a person, Waleed, the parallel here is Auschwitz is happening, Buchenwald is happening, Treblinka is happening, right now, and not just to Jewish people, but to Christians and non-Muslims and to people everywhere that are suffering under a really fascistic ideology. And instead of supporting somebody like you that's renounced terror and trying to liberate people and fight for freedom, instead these people are calling, throwing mud at you. And I guess this is the price that has to be paid for telling
them. It only damages their credibility.
Yeah. Let us go to Beth from Illinois.
Hello.
Hi, Beth. Thank you for calling
Hi.
In.
Thank you for letting me call in. Hi, Waleed.
Hello.
Hey, I just wanted to say I'd really like that these two words become part of regular conversation, and that would be ideological subversion. And, you know, this guy is a jihadist, and he's getting off calling in the show, and he's testing his snake skills and testing how well he can serve Allah. You know, I would have hung up on him a long time ago.
Okay, thank you, Beth. And before you heard the gentleman and the lovely contribution he had, what did you want to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to tell Waleed that I was very, very impressed with his finding Anwar Alawaki speaking at the ISNA event. Does he know what video I'm talking about?
I seem to have forgotten. Maybe you could remind me what I wrote about, because I write so many things every day.
Yes, it was just a very impressive video, and I do a lot of research in my local area, and I'm working hard on exposing the local jihadists here in my area. And it was very important for me to tie that ISNA with Anwar Alawaki, because I went to a mosque, and I actually filmed a man there with many people from ISNA praising Anwar in this local mosque. And I was just terribly impressed. Do you have some particular secrets or some ways that you do these searches and how you find this stuff? Because every time I get your email, I'm amazed.
Well, there's no secret. In fact, I just go to the Arabic language. I plug in the words in the Arabic language, and the litany of evidence just simply comes out. very few people are doing this. You know, you have,
yes,
I think, a guy by the name of last name Ibrahim, he does a similar thing. Memory does similar things, except memory is not a research center. They're just basically clips and things of that sort. I think we need to get deeper into research in what is said in the Arabic language. And once we do, you know, we come up with a great case, and that is doublespeak. You know, this is doublespeak at its best. Doublespeak by Muslim scholars, doublespeak by so-called Muslim, peaceful Muslims even, in which I think I'll be writing my next book titled Doublespeak, The Case for Islamophobia.
Hmm.
Yes, dualism.
Wow.
Dualism is so popular in Islam. It's just amazing that all the different types of dualism. You've got Medina and Mecca, and you've got forbidden and allowed, and all this. It's just ridiculous. They really are into that. But I just want to say I did meet you, and I have your book and your DVDs, and I appreciate the work that you do, sir. I thank you very much.
You bet. Anytime.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Waleed, I'm also sorry, just in a friendly way, if that caller...
Love that kind of call. Are you kidding me?
No,
I enjoy that kind of call.
No, absolutely.
It's just
that we want to,
You could easily prove how they spin things. They bring unrelated subjects and try to say, Mr. A says the same thing as Mr. B, when in fact Mr. A says nothing of the sort.
Yeah.
And they use Mr. B's argument to confirm Mr. A's argument. This, in a court of law, will not fly. And this is why I asked the question. If this man wants to debate me, let's debate my credibility with him. Not Islam or Christianity or whatever. Let's debate the credibility issues, because that's exactly what I like to go with such a debate. Because I have the entire emails back and forth with CNN. Here's how it works, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how it works. There's something called slander, okay? When a person is a public figure, you have to have what is called evidence of what? That they knew that it was false. So if they get too close... In other words, my emails back and forth with CNN, when I finally send my last email, the following I stated, I'm willing to open my records. I'm willing to show you the evidence. I'm willing to meet with you. I have all the evidences. That's when CNN stopped the correspondence, because their story would be a problem, because once they knew the evidence and they slander you, then it is what is called knowledge of falsity. When you're a public figure, you cannot win a lawsuit unless it's knowledge of falsity. That means they knew what they wrote was false. So with them not corresponding anymore, guess what? They don't have any evidence. There is no evidence for me to prove that they knew beforehand that what they said was false. And that's why they went with the story. And I have all the emails, and I have all the evidence to prove it.
Absolutely, Waleed. And the other thing that always I've noticed and gets to me is, no matter where you ever get with it, then they always say, oh, do you see the translation? Have you seen the actual Arabic in its proper source? You know, and you can never get to the bottom of anything. And even when people like you show up and show that no Arabic, then they start saying it's mistranslated, etc. But the bottom line is that a Muslim woman just had her throat slit in Toronto by her Afghan husband because he didn't like that he was allowing their children to grow up quote-unquote Canadian. And I'm yet to see the Nadirs of this world that just called in staying up at night worrying for that woman and denouncing what happened to her and denouncing the Islamic theology.
Well, Jamie, I'm glad you brought the issue of translation.
Yeah.
When I translated the works of Faisal Abdul Rauf, my translations were sent to the American University in Beirut, Lebanon, and it was reviewed by two Arab scholars who were Muslim fundamentalists, and what they did in their response was curse me, okay, yet no evidence of any mistranslation done by myself, because they knew very well I could take what they stated, send it to an independent source, and get the correct translation which agrees with mine. So there you have it. Scholars in the American University, who Arabic scholars sent by Muslims, could not refute my translation. This is why I'm very careful when I translate things.
Yeah. We're going to go to Luca from California.
Hi,
Jamie.
No,
it's Lucha.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, I keep confusing it. It's Luca or Lucha?
Lucha.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Lucha, go ahead, my friend.
Hi, Jamie. Good to talk to you. Waleed, I absolutely love you, man, and I listen to your speeches, and you are amazing. And my question is kind of directed at Nadir, but to any Muslims who may be listening. What are you defending? Now, you have, to me, as a born-again Christian, my God is a God of love and peace and forgiveness and unconditional love. And Muslims, and Waleed, you as a former Muslim, and I would like to ask you this. How do Muslims, I mean, if God is supposed to be, well, as they say with Allah, oft forgiving and oft merciful, especially in the verse of the sword, you know, when the sacred months have passed, slay the idolaters wherever you find them, take them captive and besiege them, blah, blah, blah. Lo, Allah is forgiving and merciful. But in fact, Allah is not forgiving and he's not merciful unless you submit to Islam. So as a former Muslim, and to any Muslims who are listening, is there ever a problem in their minds of, I mean, isn't God supposed to be a God of peace? And how can they defend Islam? I mean, aren't there ever any questions in your mind about what is it really that I'm defending? And does Allah really love me?
Thank you, Lou.
That's a good question.
Waleed, in other words, how come, I guess, more Muslims don't go through the agonizing doubt that you did?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. You know, why don't they question their own faith? And I think, you know, in Islam, the Prophet of Islam says, كَرِهَ اللَّهُ قِيلَ وَقَالَ وَكِثْرَةَ السُّؤَالِ. Allah hated many questions. So, you know, in the religion itself, you know, Muslims who are asking too many questions are not encouraged to do so, unlike the Bible, where it says, come and let us reason together, says the Lord. Let us question. Bring your arguments. It's okay, God says. Bring your arguments. Bring your objections. I will answer them. So it's a different concept. You know, I like to answer the question the lady asked by, you know, what Jesus said. You know, he's a Jewish rabbi. He's our Messiah as Christians. You know, he said very simply, you shall know them by their fruits. Okay? What was the fruit of Muhammad? What was the fruit of Islam after that? What was the fruit that we see today going on in the Muslim world? It's very easy to see. It's a God of violence. The names of Allah in the Quran pertain to issues that we would never accept as titles of God. Khayrul Makirin, the greatest of all deceivers. Al-Mutakabbir, the most proud one. Ad-Dar, the afflictor. You know, so those, you know, Maliki Rabbil Alameen, the Lord of the worlds, this world and the underworld, those titles, by the way, belong to Lucifer in the Bible, not to God. So there's a problem in Islam itself. And in fact, you know, the Bible, you know, I know many Muslims will say, well, wait a minute, Waleed, what about the Crusades? What about this? What about that? Okay, fine. Well, what about the Crusades? You know, the difference between Judeo-Christian culture and Islamic culture is the element of confession. Jews and Christians love confession. When you talk about the Crusades, you can get a litany of Christian theologians who condemn some of the things the Crusades did, unlike what you see in Turkey. In
right.
Germany, if you denounce the Holocaust or deny the Holocaust, you go to prison. In Turkey, if you begin to talk about the Armenian Genocide, you go to prison. Why? Because there is no element of confession in Islam.
Right.
In other words, the Islamic history is perfect. There's no problems in the Islamic history.
Yeah.
And that's been the problem for the Muslims, not to question and see the errors of their history.
Very profound and sacred words. Thank you so much, Waleed. Lucha, we need to move on. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Bye, Waleed.
We're going to go to Annie, also from California. I think we've got a lot of love for Waleed on the west side of the United States, the west coast. Annie, go ahead.
Hey, Jamie. Mr. Shubat, I read your article on Congressman ISA's investigation of Benghazi, and I was wondering if you could tell your listeners more about it, just in case they haven't heard it.
Oh, the issue of Benghazi is a very interesting case. It's not a conclusive case that we lay, but it creates probable cause to begin to review certain individuals. You had a man by the name of Muhammad Aqil, who's a very corrupt individual, who in other reports, there was a 270-page report, secret document, which I reviewed and interpreted some of it, in which shows this massive corruption, and other reports that talks about him assassinating individuals. In fact, one whistleblower was sharing information from the secret documents after the Benghazi fall. The Secret Services building was blown up, and files were flying all over the place. Some of those files talked about even this man being linked to funding in the Lockerbie bombing. And this man was linked to Bil Hajj as well. Bil Hajj was an associate of Al-Qaeda, associate of Osama bin Laden. In fact, it was Bil Hajj who led the revolution in capturing Muammar Gaddafi. He had wanted to capture Muammar Gaddafi long ago. And of course, the opportunity came when the Obama administration began to make the case that we need to remove Muammar Gaddafi. The Libyan war was Obama's work. And so Bil Hajj all of a sudden switched from being an Al-Qaeda operative to being a Libya liberator. And Bil Hajj was very well linked to the brother of the second man in Al-Qaeda, Al-Libi. And he trained with the brother of Al-Libi. Plus he was making claims he was tortured by the CIA. So he has a grudge against the CIA, against the United States. So we're building a case that here's one of the candidates that the United States government should be reviewing in the killing of Stevens.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. We need to move forward. Annie, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Waleed.
You bet.
And we are going to go now to somebody calling in from freezing Canada up north. It's Steve from Canada. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Jamie. How you doing tonight?
Good. Are you calling from an igloo?
No, not yet. It's not that cold. Soon. I got the sled dogs out and warming them up. So how are you doing tonight,
okay.
Waleed?
Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Waleed, I'm just wondering, I've asked this question before on this show, and I haven't gotten an answer. You're very knowledgeable. I'm wondering, it's about Obama and his trip to Pakistan when he was a student. No media has ever really touched that story or investigated it. And after he went to Pakistan, then he flew to Hyderabad in India, which is the Islamic center in India. But no one has ever really gone about what happened there when he was there and who he met and who he talked to and exactly what he was doing there. Could you shed any light on this?
Well, to be frank with you, I didn't investigate that story. But if you got something good, write me, and I'll be glad
to
review the Arabic language.
No, I'm trying to find out because the major media has never investigated this.
Well, I'll find out for you.
I'm just wondering why they've left it alone. They've gone to
Pakistan. Just a second. One second, Steve. One second. Yeah. Obama went to Pakistan in 1981, right?
Exactly. And after he left Pakistan, he flew to Hyderabad in India, according to his story. I've only seen one story in ABC News by a reporter, but then it never went into depth who he was seeing and what he did in these places. Now, apparently, he's visiting families of his friends, student friends. He had Pakistani roommates, but, you know, no light's already been shed on what happened during those trips and who he met and what happened.
And, Waleed, in some ways, it's like during the Cold War, if we had somebody coming to power and had been, let's say, in North Korea or in the Soviet Union, we would check it out and do some stories on it, right?
That is correct. In fact, when we donate money to help people in Pakistan, Christians in Pakistan, you know, we're sending checks through Western Union and stuff, they investigate us. They make sure we have a 501c3. This is to the caller who said I was a fraud. Western Union checks all these things. The government checks what we're doing. So, yes, you're right. We have to check where the person's journeys were. There's very little checked on Obama's journeys into the Muslim world or his family in Kenya.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, we're living in a world where we have a president of the United States who's overseeing, who's facilitating the takeover of the Muslim Brotherhood in the Middle East, penetration of the MB of the administration. And instead of his background being checked, we've got a former terrorist who's turned to love and renouncing terror, and people are flinging mud at you instead. We're living in an upside-down world.
Right. I mean, the deal should be saying, wait a minute, Waleed's fair about this ring issue. He says it might not spell the word Allah. They never look at my fairness when I write reports. They seem to be attacking the reports that I'm right about.
Yeah. Steve,
that guy who called in should be challenged on where Daniel Wallace ever used the word fraud. Like, I read the article about Daniel Wallace who wrote about Waleed. He never used the word fraud at all. He believes Waleed made a mistake in translation. He disagrees with his translation. He never, ever used the word fraud. Like, that's just slander. This guy should be challenged. Where was the word fraud ever used?
Yeah, they like to mix these things up. Steve.
Correct. I read all
see,
reports.
What it is,
I've
is
never
really,
seen a report.
No, I've read Daniel Wallace where he disagreed with the translation you made of Revelations. But he never, ever used the... apparently you consult the Codex Vaticanus, and...
Right, you see, here's... Yeah, the issue of the Codex Vaticanus, it wasn't... He was right. It wasn't the Codex Vaticanus. I had looked at a reference that it stated it was the Codex Vaticanus. The mistake was the reference I used did not properly issue what codex they used, so I carried their error, number one. Number two, I'm not in disagreement with Wallace. You know, my arguments over the Bismillah issue is not a conclusive argument. It's just an interesting observation. But you know how people are. They see something like Allah on a ring or the Bismillah, and they get all focused on that issue. But those are not the issues really I wanted Christians to focus on. There's much more other issues to focus on biblically.
Well, the way the caller had it, he had it like Wallace had dismissed you as being some type of fraud or, you know, perpetrating a fraud. No. I've read the story where I've read the article he wrote where he disagrees with your interpretation of Revelation. He does it in a gentlemanly academic manner. It's just an academic disagreement.
Right. Thank you, Steve. Before we go, we only have 3 minutes left. Steve, we only have 3 minutes left. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Before we go, what do you think in your gut, what was Obama doing in Pakistan in that area?
Well, he grew up as a Muslim or very close to Muslim culture, as we know. These students were his roommates, and he said that he went to visit their families in Pakistan, and afterwards he flew to Hyderabad in India. I don't know why. Like I said, I have no idea. I can't really see why he went there.
Okay.
And what I'd like to know is why. Not so much why, apparently the reason is he went to visit families, but what did he do while he was there?
Yeah. Thank you, Steve.
Okay, bye.
Waleed, we have 2 minutes left. Let's go back to where we started, Waleed. I think Steve, of course, is asking a very interesting question. But just like with... let's finish with this, Waleed, with 2 minutes left. Does it matter who Obama's relatives are and that they're raising money for radical Islam and Wahhabist education? What if somebody said, well, it doesn't matter?
It does matter. When I converted to Christianity, it did matter to my family. They denounced me. In fact, they denounced me so much that they even interviewed with CNN, which our brother there was calling about, and they lied through their teeth. They have contrary statements to other reports by others who proved that I was in prison, and they were detractors. But it does matter who we're relating to and the relationships between your conversion to Christianity versus your religion in Islam speaks volumes. If you're nice to your Muslim family and you allow them to use the Obama name to raise funds for Wahhabism, good grief, that's a huge argument versus his relationship with George Obama. So it's 100% proves beyond shadow of a doubt that Obama's relations with Islam is still alive and well, and not just any Islam, but Wahhabist, the most virulent brand of Islam.
Very, very scary. Waleed, let me just say that I think a man of your integrity and your past, and you've put your life on the line to put the truth out there. I was very, in some ways, even hurt and angered by the caller this evening. I don't even think I don't think some of these people are even worthy of your time.
Chris Hedges, he is a Pulitzer Prize winner. He says, oh, Waleed Shabbat is a fraud. But I dare anyone on earth to bring Chris Hedges arguments as to why he thinks I'm a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
There is none. In other words, repeat the lie that was said by the first liar, and you repeat it long enough,
exactly,
then it becomes truth.
Yeah. Waleed, we are out of time. Thank you so much for everything that you do. God bless you, and I hope you'll come back on the show.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Join us next week for another edition of the Jamie Glassoff Show. Good night.
I pledge allegiance